This is Carolina Business Review. Major support provided by Colonial Life, providing benefits to employees to help them protect their families, their finances, and their futures. High Point University, the premier life skills university, focused on preparing students for the world as it is going to be. Sunoco, a global manufacturer of consumer and industrial packaging products and services, with more than 300 operations in 35 countries.
It is, of course, hard to be objective, but there is something special about the Carolina summers, for sure. Welcome again to the most widely watched and longest running program on Carolina business policy and public affairs, seen each and every week across North and South Carolina for more than three decades, and thank you for supporting this dialogue that long. Summers in North and South Carolina can be especially iconic. We spend a lot of time on the beaches, of course, and on the highways to adventures and destinations. And of course, we also end up being a place that many people visit as well. But what is different about tourism this year? Every year, we like to convene the heads of tourism for the Carolinas, and this year is no different. We start our discussion with Whit Tuttle from North Carolina and Dwayne Parrish from South Carolina, and we start right now.
Major funding also by Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, and Martin Marietta, a leading provider of natural resource-based building materials, providing the foundation on which our communities improve and grow. On this edition of Carolina Business Review, Whit Tuttle, Executive Director of Visit NC, and Dwayne Parrish, Director of the South Carolina Department of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism.
Well, happy summer. Welcome to the program. We always like to have this one on. These gentlemen are not just very comfortable with each other, but work closely. I would say it's a bit of a litmus test, right, for the Carolinas to have tourism, single largest business. Is that fair to say?
Sure. Sure is Frost Day.
Record tourism, Dwayne, in South Carolina. I'm going to look at my number notes here. $29 billion total rev for last year. $33 billion in North Carolina. I mean, this is a pretty big industry, right?
It is.
Continues to grow?
Employs hundreds of thousands of people, brings lots of money to the economy.
You know, so let's start with there. And this is easy to poke holes in or ask questions about. But Dwayne, we've got 3 years now of pretty stupendous growth. At what point, number one, is this sustainable? I mean, these kind of hotel prices, these kind of travel costs, this inflationary situation. I mean, at what point do we level out, and would you expect it to hit some ceiling and drop, just the cost of travel?
Barring a recession, I don't think it'll drop. You know, during COVID, people really realized, being sort of cooped up, or what we all call cabin fever, realized how difficult that can be, just sort of cooped up at home. And they said, you know what, when I get out of this, I'm going to make it a priority to travel. And I think that has moved up the scale of people now. They make it more of a priority to travel. Hotel rates have gone up just like inflation. They've gone a little above inflation. I think that's supply and demand. People are willing to pay more. They want to get out more. Outdoor recreation has taken a new thing, like golf and state parks and beaches are all more important now and more busy, quite frankly, than they were pre-COVID.
Yeah, Whit, is this, you know, I think the New York Times called this revenge spending in tourism. Is that what this is? Would you call that generally?
Yeah, I think we saw that coming out of COVID was really revenge travel. People hadn't been able to get out, you know, they wanted to get out and they went out and did it. They got out and they traveled. I think that's relaxing now. But I think, like Dwayne said, we're seeing it's a priority. People realized how much they missed when they couldn't travel. And they're going to do it, even if it costs a little more, even if it's a little harder. They're still doing it.
I wouldn't say it's a little more, though. You know, year over year, it might be a little more. But 2020 to 2023, that's a 40% increase in some ways. Is this sustainable?
I don't know that this type of increase is sustainable, but I think, you know, they're going to pay what they're going to pay in, supply and demand. I think we're going to continue to see people wanting to travel, and so therefore the price will still be high.
Yeah, the inflation, of course, we talk about inflation in so many different ways, Dwayne. Clearly inflation plays into tourism, recreation, parks, recreation, and tourism. At what how do you model out, this may not be the right question, but how do you model out this arc that inflation is on and what it's going to do to tourism and people that can afford to go?
Yeah, I think it, like everything else, as Whit mentioned, the growth will continue to be, but the rate of growth will slow down. Rates aren't going to go down anytime soon, barring some major recession. What you'll see, I think, is a leveling off of the rates, people becoming more comfortable with whether they're choosing short-term rentals or hotels or family and friends. I think you'll see that continue to evolve as we come out post-COVID. But it's really changed the prioritization, not only of making travel more of a priority, but what they do during the trip has changed. Mm-hmm. I mentioned outdoor recreation. Mm-hmm. The rebirth of golf has come into that. And you see it in anything outdoor. You see it in the national parks. You see it in the state parks. Anything outdoor is, you know, RVing, camping, hiking, boating, fishing, paddleboarding, canoeing, all have just taken on a new, and that's been sustained. It wasn't just right after COVID. It's still going on today.
With the total revenue growing in all these areas you just talked about, you know, that'll cover up a lot of sins. So when revenue does hit the wall or starts to go down, sure. Have you identified problem areas to say, you know, when this thing turns, we need to be out front of this or that? Is there something that comes up on your radar?
No, we haven't had a problem area. Labor's still an issue. That's really not pricing, yeah. But labor's still an issue. And I think that's facing, you know, our industries all across, from airlines to hotels to restaurants to attractions. Labor is still an issue.
So with labor, Whit, is there, and I know you can't do this, and I know states can't really do this, but around immigration policy, is there a larger association of tourism execs that can bring to bear some pressure around immigration to know that if we fix even a small part of that, it'll help feed into a better labor situation?
Oh, exactly, there is, and it's the U.S. Travel Association. We're both members of it. It's essentially the lobbying group for the tourism industry nationally, you know, and they're trying to work on that because it gets caught up in an immigration issue, and it's not really an immigration, it's a workforce issue for what we're trying to get, these HB1 visas, where people are coming in, temporary workers. You know, we can take a lot more of them than we're getting right now. And there's a great track record of them coming in, doing the jobs, and then going back. So we feel like we should be able to increase that.
Do you feel like that's loosening up a little bit, or is it still that politically polarizing?
It's still politically polarizing, but it is loosening up. Yeah, we've seen it. We've gotten more. We could use a lot more, but it is getting better.
What's the policy in South Carolina around immigration?
Don't necessarily have a policy on immigration, but the state as a whole, including the government, would like to see the HB1 visa cap raised, so that we can have that, particularly in places that are, there's not a labor force close by, like some of the barrier islands of Kiowa, Hilton Head, in the mm-hmm. southern part of the state. One of the things I want to point out too, Chris, is an industry back in 2020, post-COVID, we laid off too many people. We laid off 53% of our workforce nationally. That was a mistake looking back. We sent the wrong message. The optics there were that if times are tough, we don't need you. And then when business came back quicker than anyone thought, the staff wasn't willing to come back. And so I think we made a mistake as an industry-wide. Nationally, we laid off too many people and sent the wrong mm-hmm. message. And people moved on to something else or retired or whatever they did.
Is that the same sentiment? You have the same sentiment?
Oh, definitely. You know, and I think North Carolina, the Economic Development Partnership, the business development people have been so good. There are a lot of other jobs, and so we still haven't gotten back to where we were employment numbers. Even though the spending is much higher, we still don't have as many bodies working in tourism as we did before. And it's tough to find them because there are other jobs they can take.
Yeah, so if we project that onto a specific industrial sector in hospitality, in tourism, it would be restaurants. And I don't think it's lost on anyone that there's a lot of frustration around the level of service, how many days they're open, the cost of these folks that are working in restaurants. Dwayne, that obviously goes to what you just said, but is there not an easy fix, but are we not doing something to fill that hole the right way?
There are several things happening. One of the silver linings in the cloud is wages in our leisure and hospitality sector are up 23% in our state for post-COVID. That's a step in the right direction.
Are they beyond, I'm sorry to interrupt you, they beyond where they were in 2020 then?
Yeah, they're beyond where they were in 2020.
Okay.
They've gone up dramatically. Of course, that's also a cost factor, and you mentioned hotel rates earlier. Another part of it is hotels and restaurants are figuring out how to do things differently. You know, you can check in with your phone now and bypass the front desk. Your room, if you stay on a three-night stay, they're going to ask you if you want your room cleaned on the second or third day because they don't really have enough labor to do that each day. And so I think things have changed in the hotel world. A little bit in the restaurant, but a little more difficult on the food and beverage side because someone has to cook the food, prepare it, and see people. But it's, you know, we're a very resilient industry. We figure out how to make changes to accommodate. And the accommodation now is We just don't have enough people. The other part is you're going to see a lot of restaurants closed on Sunday and Monday. You already see that now. And unfortunately, it's affecting things like airlines. It's not just hotels and restaurants, attractions and the like in our industry. And it's not an easy fix.
Yeah, and I think there's another factor to it that's impacting the restaurants, and that's people are working from home. They're not in the cities anymore on Mondays and Fridays. You know, they're working from home, so restaurants also rely on the locals to come too. And when you're not in that city center with that employment base, then the restaurant's not going to make the money. They're not going to be open.
And this is a bit of chasing it down a rabbit hole, but we have seen some research that there are folks moving out of urban cores to rural areas for a lot of reasons. Do you see that as well? And does that play into this? Or have you seen any evidence of that?
We've seen people moving out of the urban areas into the rural areas, but we've also got people moving into the urban areas.
Yeah.
So far it's filling up.
Yeah, I think particularly from the Northeast and the Midwest, in the Carolinas, we've had an influx of people that either had a second home and decided to move here, go ahead and retire and move here, or came down and bought one, which has helped, obviously, the real estate costs.
So we talked about this for decades. The in-migration in the Carolinas is really, again,
right,
as you both know. I mean, is there any slowing down on that? Do you see anything that's going to say, yeah, at some point we're going to slow down, but no?
Not really. Okay. I mean, it took off after COVID. It won't. That continued. That pace has slowed somewhat. Interest rates alone have brought that down some, but no, I don't see it slowing down very much. I mean, I think, you know, we have great weather, great food, great hospitality, a southern culture. Why wouldn't you move here to the Carolinas?
You know, it's hard not to like the business when you two talk about it in such glowing terms. Are you worried about anything?
I think workforce is a challenge for us. We're worried about that. We've also seen over-tourism getting to be a bit of an issue in some areas. So we're trying to work on managing that and managing the flow, getting people to understand the behaviors when they're out there, and also getting the right visitor to come at the right time.
What is over-tourism? Expand on that a little bit. By the way, you don't get a pass on this, because I'm going to come to you about it.
Particularly during COVID, we saw people flock to the mountains and the coast. They wanted to be outside. Unfortunately, they went to the same place, so they, instead of being all together inside, they were all together outside. So we tried to do is get them to spread it out a little. Plus, we had a lot of people that weren't experienced with being in the outdoors. So they didn't know what to pack for a hike. They didn't know that you had to wear sneakers. They didn't know you couldn't take a selfie on top of a waterfall. So there were a lot of things we're trying to do to help people be safe and protect the landscape and also protect themselves while they're out traveling. Mm-hmm. And that's something new that really wasn't an issue before COVID.
Same over-tourism. Would you describe it that way, Dwayne?
I would. I'll use Charleston as an example, a peninsula where the historic district is surrounded by water on three sides, can only hold so much. Honestly, when over-tourism happens, that's when your marketing is most critical, because if you don't market, then you have no control or say in where people go or what they do. However, the surrounding areas around Charleston, there's so many things from the beaches and the other areas around the rivers and the lakes around Charleston where you can market in not only in different geographic areas, but also time of year, different months to shift it around, where you sort of balance things out more from that perspective, whether it's traffic or over-tourism, as you call it, like on a peninsula area. Same thing for a beach where you don't, you know, cities on the coast don't have a perimeter, so how we go around, it's only goes a half a circle. So you've got to find a way to, or a linear destination like the Grand Strand of Myrtle Beach, you've got to find a way to move people out in different areas where you don't have that impact of too many people in one place at the same time.
So has that caused you to have to be more politically active when you go to the State House?
A little bit politically. We also started a campaign called what we call Undiscovered South Carolina, and it was a way to move people out of the, what I'll call the discovered areas, get people off the interstate, if you will. Even if they were still going to go to the beach, have them stop somewhere along the way, but also to get them into other areas. And with outdoor recreation, that's easy to do because a lot of our outdoor recreation is outside the bigger cities.
Yeah.
And so we've really pushed that out from a marketing perspective and drive some more traffic into those areas where they can certainly handle more, where some other places, you know, like a Central Myrtle Beach or a Hilton Head or a Charleston, particularly post-COVID, have had a lot of impact from tourism coming in. So We use our strategies to market to sort of move people into those areas.
Does this, and this is not the right way to say it, Whit, but when you, do you have to be more politically active when it comes to going to Raleigh or Jones Street, when it comes to, as Dwayne just talked about, so you've got the Gold Coast in North Carolina, you've got the Southern, Oak Island, Holden, all those places along the South Carolina, going into the Grand Strand. Do you have to make the case that we need more resources. We need not just a new interstate, but we need a better way to manage all of these people. And does it fall on deaf ears, or do you feel like there's some sympathy?
Oh, no, I think we've been heard from the beginning of the pandemic. I think that the industry itself has done a great job, and I think our political leaders understand the importance of the industry to serve it, that it helps the residents. And there's new issues that are going to come up that we're going to need that attention. Electric vehicles, electric charging. Yeah. If people are driving electric cars, they're going to have to charge them. And so we have to make sure people feel safe about that so they will travel. So there are a lot of things we have to be active in the public eye with politics. Yeah. And that's not going to go away.
Okay. Next week on this program, speaking of travel, her name is Haley Gentry, and she is the CEO and the aviation director for one of the largest airports, not just in the Carolinas, but certainly in the country, in the world. Seventh busiest now, I think, globally is where it ranks. That's Charlotte Douglas International Airport. That's next week. And also, Lynn Good is the chairman and CEO of one of the largest public utilities in the country, Duke Energy. She'll be back as well. So let's go to some. So Haley Gentry's coming on this program. How important are assets like Charlotte Douglas, like the South Carolina port, like the North Carolina port, like some of these important economic development assets? How does that become part of your portfolio, if you will?
Well, I can tell you we would not have gotten, pre-COVID, we had a direct service with British Airways from Charleston to London Heathrow. We would not have gotten that without the economic development part side of it. For example, Volvo having a plant in North Charleston, even BMW in the upstate, and the Ports Authority being there. That plane has to be filled up not just with visitors, but with business people as well, front of the plane, back of the plane. So they're a critical part of like evolving aviation. Charleston had its busiest year this past year. They fly to more direct flights to cities than they've ever had before. We hope to get that British Airways flight back again in 2024. Those industries are a critical part of what we do. And conversely, for them to pick a location, quality of life is a big part. Somebody is a visitor first before they ever pick a site. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, if they have a great experience as a visitor, they're more likely to come back and pick that site to develop a plant for Boeing or a plant for BMW or a plant for Volvo.
Yeah, same question for you, Whit, around that importance of the asset.
No, it's huge. It's where we work together really well with the business development and tourism because, you're going to need those business travelers to fill up the front of the flight, but the flight's not going to be successful if you don't have anybody in the back as well. So the leisure travelers are going to go in the back typically, and the business travelers are going to go up front. It's important to have those. We can open up new markets, and we see travel follows the flights. Mm-hmm. So if you get that service, you'll get those visitors. They're going to come. They're going to love it, and maybe they'll move that business here.
One of the big things that kind of came to light around the COVID and the pandemic reality, if you will, was the importance of aggregators like VRBO and, of course, Airbnb. Has a lot of that smoothed out, or what are the biggest challenges when it comes to, okay, what's the inside joke?
It is not smoothed out. We were a big vacation rental state before COVID. Our coast, a lot of those are rentals, and the mountains, a lot of rentals. It's just taken off. It's a phenomenon. People have discovered these vacation rentals. They love the privacy. They love the uniqueness. They love the expanded space that you get. And it took off during COVID and has not slowed down.
Yeah, I agree with Whit. It's a disruptor, much like Lyft and Uber are to the taxi industry. It's that to the hotels. But there's been some assimilation now. There's now some hotels that have some of their inventory on an Airbnb, for example. There's some assimilation that will continue to happen in that regard. But I think it's a little bit different product, as Whit mentioned, that you're looking for in terms of what's offered. There are things that hotels offer that Airbnb or short-term rentals can't, and vice versa. I think the consumer will ultimately decide that. Whit and I's job is to get them to come to the location.
Yeah.
It could even be family and friends in that mix of where they stay. But I think it's, in our legislature, there's debate about not allowing any restrictions on them. And then there's debate on the other side about not restrict them all. There's a happy medium in the middle there somewhere. And we'll get there, but it's still, it's still in kind of the early stages of the business cycle in that regard. Short-term rentals on electronic internet side has really not been around that long yet. And so I think these things will shake out in the next couple of years.
Does Airbnb, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Dwayne, but they seem to want to make this work for a whole lot of reasons.
They do. At the end of the day, they want to make it work. And I think we've gotten the tax situation there now where there's a level playing field in terms of whether you stay at a hotel or an Airbnb, you're paying the same tax rate. That's leveled out. That was issue number one. Now, issue number two are some of the regulations surrounding that. It will, and they want to play, and they want to help, too. They don't want a bad reputation of being a place that has parties and noises. That's the last thing Airbnb or VRBO wants. So I think at the end of the day, it will work itself out. Yeah. It's still still in the infancy stages as an industry.
Same experience for you?
Yeah, exactly. We've had a long-term deal with Airbnb and VRBO to get them to pay the taxes. I think there's still a lot of the regulation there that's got to get worked out, but as an item, it's not going away.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. A couple of one-offs is pretty important announcement out of South Carolina within the last couple of weeks about the International African American Museum. It's been long in the process and long in the pipeline. It's finally opened up, about $120 million or so investment. Why is not to diminish the case for the slave trade in Charleston, which it was ground zero, as we well know, for a long time. Why is IM, as they're calling it, why is that such a significance?
Well, it's one of the largest attractions in our state to open up in over a decade, but it also is one more, Charleston has a lot of feathers in its cap. This adds one more to it. But what it also does, it tells the historical part, the educational part of really what happened at that time, and tells it in the framework of 2023. Instead of say 1974, and it has gotten so much attention. It's a combination of being funded by the state, the county, the city, and private funds. And former Mayor Joe Riley, the longtime mayor there, was really sort of the instigator behind all of that. Put it together, decades in the making, like you said. But it's just one more. Charleston doesn't do anything halfway.
Without debating it,
it gets debated, and it may take a little longer, but at the end of the day, it is truly a prize, and I think that's what what they're calling it. Yeah, it will be that, and it's phenomenal. It's just opened up, and it will I think it'll be just another feather in their cap and a phenomenal place to visit for everyone.
Yeah, the interesting part is you read some of the background around the story was that it's located in Gadsden Wharf, which was the place that the slave trade. In South Carolina, I know we had, the czar of natural resources in North Carolina was on, the secretary of DNR.
Yeah.
He talked about the year of the trail.
Year of the trail, yeah.
So why, again, I know these are a little bit of promotive things, but why is that so significant in North Carolina?
Well, I think, as we talked about, people were looking to get outside. And so many people miss things because trails, often only the locals know about the best ones. So the idea here was we got people getting outside. Let's get them into the best places. Let's keep them safe. Let's help them have a wonderful experience. And let's highlight a lot of the trails, and everybody thinks, that may be in the mountains or the coast, but there are a lot of great trails in the urban areas in the state, food trails and things like that, that we could promote that don't get a lot of exposure.
Does any of the Biden administration infrastructure money feed into that you know of?
I don't know if it went to Year of the Trails. It's done a lot to help tourism promotion throughout the state.
Okay. Yeah. We've got about 3 minutes left. Dwayne, let's look forward to 2024. Here we are, 2023. Would you expect it to be a record year above last year?
I do expect 2023 to be a record year above last year.
What do you think? How is that going to leverage out into 2024? What would you think?
A little more difficult to tell in 2024. Obviously, lots of things come into play that you don't know about, but assuming there's nothing major recession-wise or, God forbid, another pandemic or something like that, assuming things stay somewhere, I expect continued growth, maybe not as high percentages we've had the last couple of years. Like our state parks revenue is up 34% from pre-COVID just in 2 years. I don't expect that kind of growth, but I expect it to continue to grow.
What are your headwinds, you think?
Gas prices is always a headwind. We're a drive state.
Labor's
still going to be an issue, but it's an issue everywhere. It's becoming, it's not just to restaurants and hotels now. Labor's an issue everywhere. I think that continues. Over-tourism, as Whit talked about, has to be managed better. We're getting better at it. As it was a big issue before COVID, and COVID made it sort of go away, but it's come back now, and the good news is we've had some experience pre-COVID, and we'll get better at it as we go along managing that as well.
Yeah, Whit, same question. What do you think is going to happen this year? Another record year, more than $33 billion?
Oh, yeah, I think so. We won't go up 15% again like last year, but I'm thinking we'll get back into the 4 or 5% increase range, yeah.
On $33
billion? On $33
billion. I could see why over-tourism will be an issue. Same question, though. What are your headwinds? What are you worried about? What do you keep an eye on, model out?
Yeah, you know, workforce, I think, is an issue. Getting people to come, potential recession, we'll see what happens with that. You know, things like boycotts, the political nature of the next couple of years, I think, are going to be interesting for us to see and to navigate for all the states. Workforce is probably the biggest issue, though, that we look at.
I know you all hate this question, but I kind of want to ask it. Where's your favorite place to go?
Oh, gosh. In South Carolina?
Yeah, well, maybe not. Maybe you're going somewhere else.
Well, I thought that might give me a hook out of stuff.
Yeah.
My favorite spot, can I give you two?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
My favorite spot in the upstate is Lake Jocassee. It's a Devil's Fork State Park.
Yeah, yeah.
Prettiest lake in the state's, absolutely beautiful.
Okay.
My favorite place along the coast is Charleston, the beaches there. The historic district and around that area. Those are two of my favorite places.
And you have 10 seconds, so you can almost wiggle out of this. What's your favorite place?
All right, well, we just did a program called Dream Big in Small Town North Carolina, so I would say the Blue Jay Bistro up in eastern North Carolina.
That's a good one. Good promotion. Thank you, gentlemen. Always nice to see you. Until next week, I'm Chris William. Hope your weekend is good. Good night.
Gratefully acknowledging support by Martin Marietta, Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, Sunoco, High Point University, Colonial Life, and by viewers like you. Thank you. For more information, visit CarolinaBusinessReview.org.